I'm Terry Clark, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, Country Gold Backstage.
You're listening to Country Gold. I'm Terry Clark, and joining me backstage live from the Grand Ole Opry is Marty Stewart. Thanks, Marty, for being here.
My friend, Terry Clark. How are you?
I'm great. You know, whenever I see your face, it brings back probably one of the greatest memories of my life and highlight of my career, because you and your lovely wife, Connie Smith, inducted me as an Opry member.
That's right.
Back in, 2004. That was a long time ago. And here I sit.
In the Grand Ole Opry dressing room.
In the Grand Ole Opry dressing room, and my picture's on the walls now. And
you've been a great addition to the Grand Ole Opry. Oh,
thank you. And thank you for being the one to invite me
my
that
pleasure,
night.
My honor.
That was an amazing thing. And you've been a member here since 1992. So last year was your 25th year anniversary. Does it feel like it's been that long?
It's crazy. I started out here in 1972 in Lester Flatt's band, and I was 13. And then after Lester passed away, I went out on the road with Johnny Cash. And I called one day when we, back in the 90s, we started trying to make records, and I called Hal Durham out here. I said, you know what, I would like to come and be a member of the Grand Ole Opry again. He said, well, let me think about it. And he called me in a couple of weeks. He said, I think that's a good idea. You ready? And I went, well, I've thought about it. There's two people I need to ask. He says, oh, I need to talk to Mr. Acuff, and I want to talk to Minnie Pearl, and I want their endorsement. So I went and talked to Roy Acuff, and he gave me his endorsement. And you probably remember Minnie had had a stroke then, and she was pretty much confined to her bedroom in her house. And I asked somebody that was helping her, I said, what kind of roses does she like? Oh, she likes white roses. So I think I bought 100 white roses, and I had an appointment at Miss Minnie Pearl's house, and I walked in carrying these 100 roses. And she said, oh, look at those tight pants. Oh. Oh, no. But we talked, and I loved her, and she gave me her endorsement. And on the way home, I called Hal Durham. I said, it would be my honor to be a part of the Grand Ole Opry. So I love the place.
I got to tell you, I feel as an artist, the George Jones song, Who's Going to Fill Their Shoes? And tonight on the show, I think we had three people on this show tonight that I honestly feel like you and Ricky Skaggs and Steve Warner are all people, including, and Vince wasn't here tonight, but I put him in that category that you guys are, you live, eat, breathe, sleep the history, and we're playing, instruments before your fingers could reach around the neck of the guitar, and with legends, and you guys are so valuable to the Opry, because you're the ones that are single-handedly, I think, making sure that the people that came before us never are forgotten, and that the young people know who they are. And gosh, it's kind of the changing of the guard is sort of happening, and I see it happening with and you guys are the ones, I think, that are the next ones that are really we need you really bad here.
Well, the country music was passed into our lives. Mm-hmm. As we were all pickers. I think that's what we had in common, the guys you just mentioned. But, you've done this a long time now as well, so you have inspired a lot of young ladies to pick up a guitar and sing and put on a cowboy hat and be who they are. And, the thing about it is that the real goal to me right now, Connie talks about this, my wife Connie, she talks about, she said, we're teachers now. Mm-hmm. And the real goal is not just to talk about the past, but to bring the past into now. But the real goal is song by song, artist by artist, writer by writer, is to pass it on and get it into the hands and the hearts of the next generation of people and watch them fly. It's wonderful to have spiritual kids and musical kids out there to just watch them fly.
You're absolutely right, and I've noticed it in the last 2 to 3 years. I'm going to be 50 this year, and, for a while there, I didn't really feel that, and then the last couple of years, it started to swell for me, like younger women coming up and saying and wearing my T-shirts, and their artists, and telling me that the music meant something, and I'm realizing that it's so much bigger than our... we want to have hits and we want to do our thing and play our music, but it becomes such a bigger animal than that, and it's about so much more. It's huge.
Those were the tools we had to get started with, and it worked, and there was a season for that. But you're right, it is way big. It is a big spirit. And again, It's about, you know, we've missed if we haven't passed it on. And the beauty about country music, I still look at country music as a family. It's a big, big blue mm-hmm. chip industry now, but in my mind, it's still a family. And the thing about country music, it has never thrown its elders away. If you look down through the history of country music, it's honored its elders. And as long and people like Bill Monroe or Earl Scruggs mm-hmm. or Johnny Cash or Merle, they never got old. They yeah. just got cooler. Look at Willie Nelson. Yeah. He's the coolest guy on planet Earth. And he's still writing. He's still touring. He's passing it on to his kids. And kids are still coming to see him. Multi-generations are coming to see Willie. So that's the template right there.
Yeah. And if you just keep playing your music and looking at the bigger picture and I think realizing that it's so much bigger than yourself or even a point in time, I think that's the key. And you're so right about they don't throw away their elders, and that's why I'm so honored to be a part of this family.
Absolutely.
That we speak
and of. You know, Terry, the other thing that must be said, the song, mm-hmm. the importance of a great song has always been paramount in country music. And sometimes it ebbs and flows. Songs, you know, get trite for a while, then a great one comes along and everybody stands and applauds. But if you're a young artist listening, man, don't step up to the microphone until you have the right song. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. It all starts with the song.
Absolutely.
You know, there are some sayings in Nashville about what you can do with a crappy song. You can produce it. You can do all kinds of stuff, but it's at the end of the day, it's still
the
not
bad
a great
part
song.
About that. And I have some proof of this. The bad part about it, every now and then a crappy song will become a hit.
Well,
and people will want you to sing it for the rest of your life.
You better like it. If you're going to record something, you better be sure you want to sing it for the rest of your life. Your wife Connie Smith has been a Hall of Fame member since 2012.
And that she makes was me Mr. Connie Smith now.
Yes, it does. And she was inducted by Merle Haggard. How mm-hmm. cool was that?
She kept, she kept going, who? And I said, call Merle. She said, he lives in California. They don't fly. I said, you don't know. Do you call him? Mm-hmm. And she called him and had him on the phone. She said, Merle, I want to ask you if you would induct me into the Country Music Hall of Fame. He said, I knew you were going to ask me to do something that I couldn't refuse. And so he and his wife, Teresa, got on their bus and drove cross-country to put that medallion around her neck. And that's the other side of the honor for the Hall of Fame is who inducts you. Yeah. And I don't know that it could get any more solid than that.
That's pretty cool. And she's just, you know, still sings so great.
She's
one of the greatest voices ever.
She's incredible.
Your new album, latest album, is Way Out West. And I've heard so many great things just from players in town and people in my band and that about this record. And it's a love letter to the American West.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a concept theme.
We went out to the edge of the Mojave Desert in my mind and made a blue sky, twangified, palm tree based psychedelic journey through the spirit world of the Mojave.
Wow, and can you say that again?
a blue sky,
I think I need to smoke a cigarette.
Palm tree based, twangified, psychedelic journey through the Mojave Desert. And when the record was through, I wanted you to feel like you've been on Willie's bus for 21 days.
Right on.
And so I called my buddy Mike Campbell that played guitar with Tom Petty.
Mike Campbell's
one
of the greatest guitar players of all
time.
And
we were buddies from years ago. And I said, Campbell, this record I'm putting together, I could cut it in Nashville, but I want to see palm trees when I walk outside the studio. I need the real atmosphere on me. Would you produce it? And he heard some of the songs. We went out to Campbell's studio, and between there and Capitol Records out there, we made this record, and it has been an incredible journey.
That's amazing. You know, and I think it's great when you're at the point in your career where you just do what you feel like doing, and you're not chasing anything. You're just making great music.
I got the girl. I
got
a black
all,
Cadillac
man.
With some gas in it. I got $150 in my pocket and a good sounding Telecaster. Everything else is gravy.
Yeah, and you've got quite a collection of country music memorabilia.
And the insurance
too.
Bill to prove it.
I can't even imagine that insurance bill is like. You're opening up a museum. Is that where you're going to put all your stuff in your hometown of Philadelphia, Mississippi? It's the Congress of Country Music is what you're calling it.
There's a Mississippi's the birthplace of America's music, and can mm-hmm. back that up. It's staggering who's come from there. There is an informal museum trail down there, and rock and roll is represented at the Elvis Presley birthplace in Tupelo. Across the delta of the B.B. King Blues Center and Delta Cultural Center, I believe it is, in Indianola, Mississippi. The Grammys just put in a $20 million facility on the campus of Delta State. That's the North State. In the Central State, where I come from, It's 35 miles from where Jimmy Rogers, the father of country music, was. And I love my hometown. So this 20,000-piece collection plus will be the centerpiece of a cultural center. And it has a performance space. It will have museum space. We'll broadcast radio and television from there. And books and museum exhibits are already being staged out of the warehouse down there. I think we're 3 years away from opening the doors. But everything's warehoused, and there's already a lot of activity going on.
So was this something that sort of grew for you? Like, you started out, oh, I'd like to have that. That'd be a cool jacket, or that'd be a neat thing to have in it. Or was it very intentional that you wanted to amass, like, you're a country music curator historian now. You've got, like, you've got memorabilia that, I mean, the Smithsonian would kill to have in places like that. So how did that evolve?
At the bottom of my heart, I'm still a fan. I'm a big fan. And when I was in Lester Flatt's band, those guys would take off their ties after too many TV shows and throw them in the garbage. Can I have that? Or they would wad up the set list. And I said, can I have that? Thumb picks. Or, can I have that? And in Johnny Cash's band, the same way. He'd, you know, Johnny just throw stuff around and say, do you mind if I take it? I don't care. But what really did it, I went into a thrift store on 8th Avenue here about 1981 or two. And there was a hand-tooled leather carrying case, a makeup case. I thought, well, that's kind of cool. And I looked, and on the front it said Patsy Cline. And inside it had her name and address. And I put a blanket over it, and I went and called her husband, Charlie. I said, Charlie, where did you guys live in Madison, Tennessee? Oh, Hillhurst, Hillcrest. I went and got it. That was the case. I bought it for $75.
Wow.
So in the early 1980s, Terry, that was what was happening around here. People's costumes, their personal effects, guitars. Nobody cared because, as you know, the times were changing. The sound and the look of country music was changing. And the old folks and their stuff was being, you know, put out to pasture. And the problem I had with that, those were the people that raised me.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole story needed to move forward to me. And after I joined the Cash Band, we went to London, and I heard a southern accent talking on the street. And I shook hands with a guy, and it was Isaac Tigret. And Isaac was one of the co-founders of the Hard Rock. And he said, come see what we're doing. So he took me in the Hard Rock, and there's the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and all these things on the wall. And all the way back to America, I was going, well, that could be Hank Williams or Porter Wagoner or Johnny Cash. And I started making lists of who wore that stuff that didn't care anymore. And it started in my bedroom at my mom's house. And then it grew to a little warehouse, and now there's 20,000 pieces, and a museum's going to wrap its arms around it. So it is a Smithsonian level museum.
That's amazing. And, you know, another place that you went with Johnny Cash was my hometown in Medicine Hat's first show I ever saw.
First ticket
my mom ever bought me to go see a country show was Johnny Cash at the arena in Medicine Hat. And guess who his guitar player was that night? You.
Wow.
Yeah. A little John Carter got out and sang Swingin'.
That means we had to play
show.
It for him,
didn't
it?
He did. You just released a vinyl version of your record, and you have Merle Haggard on this album?
There was the Way Out West record was released, and one of the things that was hard to do is we had to leave some things on the cutting room floor, and I knew they were relevant. And I named it Desert Suite Part 1, and there was a song, and it's coming out on a 7-inch EP, I think, for Record Store Day. My manager, John Peets, was one of the people who created Record Store Day for independent labels. So I think that we left one song behind. It was a straight-up song we're putting on there, but the Desert Suite thing, it really is a psychedelic romp through the desert. You run into the Maddox Brothers and Rose. There's one left, Don Juan Maddox. They were the people that opened the doors on the West Coast, the rockabilly pioneers and the country music pioneers. So Don Maddox played with us. He did a song called Step It Up and Go. He's 94.5. And then it rolls into Merle and me sat on two stools and did TV Blues.
Wow.
And to hear it now, knowing that we know how he passed away, and, you know, he was being real about it, but it hits pretty hard. It's pretty good.
You have a very enviable place in country music and in your career. And there, I've seen, you know, some of these hotter new acts taking out some more veteran acts on these big tours and getting them in front of thousands and thousands of people. Eric Church took Dwight Yoakam out, and you're going out with Chris Stapleton. And in, he's great, by the way. I'm a huge fan of he all is. Of us are. He records in Studio A over at RCA. So what have you done shows with him, or is this an upcoming
tour? I think we did 12 or 14 shows with Chris last year, and it worked.
Yeah.
And it just flowed. He's for real. He and Morgan are good people, and so at the end of this, I don't think anybody wanted it to end, so here came 40 more offers this year. So it was a good look, and I love his audience. They're in on it.
Yeah.
And my advice to anybody listening is, like, you know, be nice to up-and-coming acts, because you never know when you're going to be opening for them.
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? Not everybody gets to do that. I mean, it takes a certain act that has a certain hip value still. There's a hip factor, and you're one of them, and you get out there honoring, like, tradition and the outfits your band's wearing and the way Harry's just standing at the snare old school playing, and it's everybody in town is like, that's the coolest thing ever, and it's cool. It's like, you know, you can see artists, some artists, I think, and some people in general will embrace aging and well, I'm just old and just roll over and kind of, well, I'm just going to. You're not doing that.
Nah.
I mean, you're still blazing trails and out there, the coolest band and music and show out
there.
We
try to keep it about the music. Yeah. The music is first and foremost. Chris Scruggs has been with us for like 3 years now. Mm-hmm. He's our second bass or third bass player. But Kenny and Harry and me started this thing almost 20 years ago now. And Terry, there's never been one crossword, one argument. We talk about things and we go out and do them. But Kenny had a line when we first put our band together. He said, if we knock ourselves out, you might work on the other side of the stage too. And remember our old friend Cowboy Jack Clement? Cowboy used to say, we're in the fun business. If we're not having fun, we're not doing our jobs. And we live by that. And our other thing is, if we believe in it, we'll pay to do it. But if we don't believe in it, you don't have enough money to get us to pay to do it. And we try to keep it there. And we do keep it there. And I love it. I love this band.
What's not to love about this band? Kenny Vaughn and Chris Scruggs, and it's great. You've got very premier players in this band. These guys are top of the line. A couple years ago, your friend Travis Tritt recorded a live album at the Franklin Theater, and you came out and hung out with him for that. Was it?
I saved it for him.
You did? I bet you did. Marty brought the cool. So what was it like doing Whiskey Ain't Working Anymore again? Has it been a while since you two have done that song?
It had been a long time. You know, that song happened by accident, because I wrote it with a buddy of mine named Ronnie Scaife, and I was doing a record called Tempted.
And I love that record, by the way.
I was finished with songs. Yeah. Well, that's Harry. And I was finished with the songs, and we wrote this song called The Whiskey. It started out, The Whiskey Won't Work Anymore. And I said, how about The Whiskey Ain't Working Anymore?
That's country, yeah.
And I told Scaife, I said, Bo Cephas ought to cut that song. I could hear Hank singing that song, so I sent it to Bo Cephas, and he didn't think he needed it. So he's, no thank you. And I was going through a drive-thru at a Burger King in Birmingham, Alabama, and I heard this voice coming out of the radio singing, I'm a member of the country club. I went, I don't know who that is, but he sings like a star, and that would be a good place for that whiskey song. So I sent it to Travis Tritt, and his producer cut it on him, and he called and asked if I'd come play the guitar. I went, sure. Travis was not there. I never met him. And on the way out of the studio, Greg Brown says, why don't you sing the second verse? I said, it doesn't need me. He's got it covered. He said, nah, just sing it. We may not use it. So I sang it, and I had no idea it was going to be a single, and it happened, and we'd still never met. But when we did meet, it was over the making of the video of The Whiskey Ain't Working Anymore. And I felt like we were raised five doors down. We loved the same people. We loved the same music. We made fun of each other in the same kind of way. And I knew that I'd made a brother for life. Wow. And I do love Travis. He's an incredible singer.
And you went on to do This One's Gonna Hurt You and some other things together.
Yeah.
And that's. Have you guys ever toured together?
Oh, we did a tour back in those days called the No Hats Tour.
Oh, yes, and I remember that.
It was big.
Yes.
It was big. And we did some more. And, every time we... It's a funny one. It's kind of like Willie and Waylon. We can go 10 years and don't go on stage together. But the minute we walk out there, people still respond to it.
Yeah.
And they're friendly towards.
Nostalgia is big. I mean, people can put themselves
this
in
point,
a place.
They probably just feel sorry for it.
I don't think so. You've always got your hands in something, like, whether it's a TV show or photography and, you know, your collection, obviously. And I admire that. I believe in taking opportunities when they come along and trying different things. That's why I'm doing this radio show and having a great time. And what's your latest project? What's new on the horizon that you're going to get into next?
Well, my goal in life was to do what Alan Jackson and George Strait did, is just stand there and sing with my guitar. And it just didn't work out that way for me. I thought, man, if you're going to survive, you're going to have to get up and go. But then I guess, what is the next project? They're re-releasing a record called The Pilgrim that I did.
Yes.
Which I love that record.
Great
it
record.
Was the front door to a whole different musical way of life. And there's a book coming out around it, so I'm trying to compile the chapters to that. We have a Hillbilly Surf Band record we're almost finished with. There's a Connie Smith record to be made this year. And got another TV show that I have cooked up in my head that I'm going to shoot a pilot for this fall.
Is that all?
Other than that, and build,
is that
a,
all you
and
got?
Build a museum. And be Mr. Connie Smith.
Sounds like you got your hands full, not being Mr. Connie Smith, but you've got a lot going on. You're on the road all year, and folks can see you on the road with Chris Stapleton and on your own dates at martystewart.net. Thanks for joining me on Country Gold, Marty Stewart.
Let me tell you something. I love you. I don't get to see you a whole lot, but I love you, and that's how it is. And that's how it will always be. I'm proud of you. I respect you, and I honor you, and I'm glad you have this show. Thanks for having me on. Country Gold with Dad.